Here we go. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Russell. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I'm grateful to God for that, and we're going to talk about him. And that's the deal. That's what this meeting's going to be about. I always like to push the envelope, get people crazy. You know, I'm going to do anything to get New York to send me a letter saying, stop doing that, you know? Stop doing that. Don't do that. Don't read the big book like that. Stop reading the Bible. Stop doing that stuff, you know? Closing me down, you know? And getting people upset because they're upsettable and all that stuff. You know, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if you get upset, you know, you owe me like a copayment for like a spiritual MRI. I've like found something in you that needs fixing, you know? You got to go out and fix that deal, you know? So I've been around for a little over 32 years, and I love this step. I love step 7. Step 7 is where it is at. You know, step 6 is pretty cool. That's the step that separates men from boys. We talked about this last week. It separates. There's a separation that goes on here. I don't know if you've noticed it. You stick around for a while, you'll notice the separation. It's not only the drinking. It's the thinking. It's not only that people separate themselves. Don't listen. There's a lot of people that are drinking in AA. You just can't smell it because it doesn't smell like drinking. It smells like complaining, whining, talking about other people behind their back, being anxious all the time. It looks like it doesn't look like being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. See, in the book, the guys in the first 4 years, he says, we've experienced much of heaven, and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. They weren't talking about not drinking. Everybody not drinks. Everybody comes in AA not drinks. Like 1% gets rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. And after a while, if you hang around here, you notice that those people, the people that are excited at 30 or 40 years, that are excited about their life, you know, that feel like that feel comfortable in their skin, they stand out. It is obvious. It is obvious, just like it was obvious to the people back then when they said they noticed such a release, such a happiness, something they thought a person ought to have, more than just mere physical sobriety, something that Bill Wilson called emotional sobriety, the next frontier, something that is more than just not drinking. It's something incredible. It's just something else, and it's hard to even discern. You just sort of it's like the Supreme Court says about pornography. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. You know what I mean? And you can tell there's this ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous. You know, trust me on that deal. So you're either gonna stay sober or swallow up the wisdom of these books and the wisdom of some old-timers, or you're going to stay sober based upon the wisdom of the rooms. God help you if you stay sober based upon the wisdom of the rooms, which is basically the common denominator of all the crazy alcoholics in here. You know, the lowest common denominator so that nobody gets offended. And the real deal is, the real deal in here, the real changing power in here is offensive. You didn't get in here because you weren't offended. You didn't get in here because things were going good. You got in here because you got the crap beat out of you, and you admitted that you had one bad old idea. One. Now you got 10,000 of them. You know, you're a freight train going a million miles per hour towards destruction because every idea in your head that feels comfortable to you is wrong, only you don't think so. You don't think so. And after 15 years of shitting on everybody, on being selfish and self-centered and only giving a crap about yourself and chasing after the broads and getting laid and money and all the crap that you chase after before, during, and even after you come to AA, after doing that and making a wreck of your life and feeling crummy even in here, being restless, irritable, and discontent, you finally admitted, probably because you're arrested or you got a divorce or something happened, that you have one problem, and that is you drink too much. And so you come in here, and then you spend the next 20 years realizing, if you're lucky, that you got about 2,000 other problems that are all wrong and screwed up, but you don't think so because you're comfortable gossiping about other people and thinking crappy thoughts about other people. That's the way you live. And you come in here, you go to discussion meetings and whine and cry about the crap that you don't have or going to get or want to get, and you live one of those if-only lives. If only I had this, if only I had that, if only I had more money, if only I had a boyfriend, if only I had a girlfriend. Not being comfortable right here, right now, because it's absolutely glorious, because God is great. He's unbelievable. You got everything you need. With cancer, without cancer, you know. I mean, the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. He was singing psalms in jail. Where do you get that attitude, like the Al Kennedy attitude, where I went to that meeting and I was 3 months sober, and this guy does an incredible meeting, and everybody's looking at him like they're looking like this is like an alien. This guy was like incredible. And then he walks out the door, and I say to my sponsor, that guy's unbelievable. And he says, you know, he's got cancer. He's got 3 months to live. And I didn't even hear what he said because it didn't compute, because, you know, my feeling is if you've got a paper cut, that's good for 15 meetings, you know? And I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's got cancer. He's got 3 months to live. I said, what do you mean? He didn't say anything about cancer. He didn't say anything about 3 months. He didn't say anything about that. I had never been to an AA meeting except hearing people complain and whine about stuff. And this guy had 3 months to live, and he did an AA meeting and never even mentioned it. Was trying to help other people and walked out. I said, man, how do I get a hold of that drug? Where do you get that stuff? You know where you see that in Alcoholics Anonymous? Once a year, if you're lucky, in one person. Very rare. Very rare. That deal is very, very rare. And most people that see that, it scares them. What it does is it really scares them. It scares them. They get scared to be sponsored by people like that. It's a scary thing because it's scary because they don't understand that. They don't understand it. So, step seven. Well, we separated the men from the boys in step six. There may be some boys left in here. I'll get rid of them before the day is out. When I start reading the Bible, they'll run out of the room sucking their thumbs, you know, thumb-sucking crybabies. You know, I don't know when it was after I had 25 years or 26 years or 27. I don't know when it was when I realized that, you know, after you get about 32 years, they really can't kick you out. There's some sort of rule. I don't know what it is, you know. I don't know. There's a rule. Since this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it. I was actually going to give my speech on humility, but I really never do it with a group this small. It's usually a larger group that I work with. Okay. So, in the big book, it says rarely ever, it talks about if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. That's what it says. If you want what we have, whoever we is, you got to get a we. If you want what we have, those guys who wrote the book, start from 1935 to 1939. Between 1935 and 1939, approximately 100 guys, you know, got sober. It's a couple of gals. And they talked about being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence. They talked about all sorts of unbelievable things, which I'm going to read right here. Unbelievable things. Things you don't hear in AA anymore. Things you don't hear in AA anymore. You don't hear this stuff in AA anymore. A, it's just about putting the plug in the jug and a couple of other things. But they talk about some unbelievable. The guys that started this thing that had 4 years, they said, rarely have you seen a person fail as thoroughly fall apart. If you want, we have, and it wouldn't go to any length to get it. You just throw away all preconceived. Hey, listen, forget about this crap about religion. You know, we lose prejudice against religion. We don't badmouth religion or clergy. We lose prejudice. We lose all prejudice. We begin to see where religious people are right. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Bill Wilson's sponsors, his real mentors, were, you know, Sam Shoemaker, who was his pastor at Calvary Church, and Ed Dowling, the Jesuit priest. They're the ones that helped write the steps and everything. But of course, in the first 4 years, when they wrote the fifth chapter, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly done what we've done. You do what you do, you'll get what we got. Of course, they weren't reading the big book of the 12 of 12 or all the stuff we're reading in here. Most people don't read. They were reading the Bible. That's all they read, the Bible, and things and commentaries from the Bible. Period. In Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which is conference approved, which is the history of AA in the first 4 years, it actually goes on 10 years after that. If you ever want to open up your mind and actually see what they were doing specifically, not generally in the big book, but specifically what they were doing with the prayers in the morning and all, and the books they were reading, you'll find a line in that book where it says, the old timers found that the books Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, and 7, I mean, you don't have to be Christian. I'm not saying you got to be Christian or anything like that, but I'm telling you, these are the books they read. This is the stuff, this is the juice they were sucking on to get rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. It was Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. They said they found these books, I'm not making this stuff up, absolutely essential. Now, I'm one of these guys that believes that words have power. So I believe that essential means something. It means it's essential. And I believe absolutely essential means it's like essential to the power of two. So I believe if you're not reading that deal, you're not really interested in this thing. You're just playing games with yourself. It's just mental masturbation. The book of James, and the book of James, by the way, we were almost called the James Club. and 1 Corinthians 13, which is the love chapter. Okay, so I'm going to read something from the Sermon on the Mount because to make a point in here, because nobody else, if I don't read it, you're not going to read it anyway. Well, a few of you guys are going to read it. So you'll hear it here, and you complain to New York and say some guy's reading from the Bible, and they'll close down this place, you know? That'll never happen. Don't even worry about that. That'll never happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. Trust me. Alcoholics Anonymous will never say, you will never hear from Alcoholics Anonymous, no reading of the Bible, you know, none of that. You'll never hear that. Because, you know, if the people who are reading the Bible got out of these rooms, this place would fall apart. Because then you'd just be left with the alkies that aren't doing that. And that would be an interesting business meeting. Be an interesting deal, let me tell you. So let me read, let me read a few things from the big book. I read a few things from the 12 and 12. A couple of things, you know, things from the 12 and 12. I'm going to read a couple of things, excerpts from the Bible, from conference-approved Bible material. This is the stuff they were reading. Okay, and then I'm gonna launch into some. We'll be in Pluto by then. Okay, and then we're going to the next star. You know what I mean? Then I'll sort of extrapolate that out and get you all really crazy. Okay, so this would be pretty cool because you won't hear this again. That's what I really want to give you. I want to give you an A meaning that you won't hear anywhere else ever for 20 years. You know, that's what I live for. I live for people come up to me and says, you know, I've been in AA 10 years. I've never heard anything like that, you know. I have people come up to me and says, yeah, Valerie knows. They come up to me and they say, you know, I've been in AA 25 years. I've never heard anything. I've never seen anybody do that. I say, oh, that's cool, you know. It's a good one. So you'll remember this one. She says, yeah, I'll remember it, you know. You know, all they hear is the blah, 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 the blah, 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 you know. And, you know, nobody's getting better. You know, nobody's getting better, you know, just sort of hanging around, rearranging the chairs in the Titanic because there's no power. It's like a form of religion without power. It's a bunch of people sitting around thinking they're getting well, and nobody's getting what they've got in this book. Nobody's sucking on that juice. They're just playing games with each other, you know, just sitting around making believe that we're sober. Sort of like ersatz sobriety, you know, so that dilettante crap, you know, none of the serious industrial strength crap that these guys were sucking on. So here we go. Let's go. Let me read this stuff. These are the guys that said, we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. These are the guys. I'm going to read from those guys. First 4 years. These are the guys that weren't reading the big book. These guys that I'm reading from, they were reading the Bible for 4 years. This is what they have to say. So if you don't like it or if you think it's kind of strong, don't blame me. You need to write New York and tell them, take these old timers, these guys that started saying, rip their stories out of the book. And if you want to know what they were reading, these guys, when you hear all this stuff, you know what I mean? And then you start, why don't you think this, think, am I hearing this in AA today? And if you're not hearing this in AA today, it's because you're not feeding on the stuff they were feeding on. You're not grazing on the stuff they were grazing on. Some of us are. Some people are. Because I don't think this is a dress rehearsal. This is your life. You know, I don't really want to get to the end of life and say, man, I missed the whole deal. You know what I mean? I just missed it. Because I just hung around with a bunch of people trying to act cool. Scared of other people criticizing them and all that sort of stuff. I didn't get that new freedom, that new happiness, you know? I was scared that people might criticize me or judge me or something like that. So I, you know, sucked my thumb throughout AA meetings and worried about what I was going to say and what people were going to think about me and whether I was going to be criticized. Crummy life. Okay, page 266, he sold himself short. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. Now, I just want to preface one thing here. We're going to go into the seven-step. This is all seven-step stuff. It may not look at it. It's all seven-step stuff. When you start going to the seven-step, you're going into the battle between what's called God and mammon. You're going heavy duty into the battle. This is where, you know, you say it's separate the men from the boys. This is where the men from the boys are really separated. This is where you're going to decide whether you're interested in getting laid or you're interested in focusing on God. This is where you're going to decide whether you're interested in a new car or you're interested in God. This is where you're going to decide whether you're interested in your old way of life and the old things you did and the things you used to chase after or whether you're interested in focusing on only him and he's the most important thing and everything else is secondary. This is what really separates the men from the boys. That's what this is going to focus on. So everything I'm going to read is going to talk about what these old timers were talking about. And the one thing you're going to see is they were focused, focused, and they were focused on only one thing. There was only one thing that they were focused on. And it was the same thing that they called the great fact. They were all focused on the great fact. They weren't focused on the crap you hear in discussion meetings. They weren't focused on their old life. They were focused on the power that lifted them from their old life and made them a new creature, a new person, a new deal. They were focused on that deal. And there's a lot of loss of focus in here because, just like Bill Wilson said, worldly clamors. We're all involved in worldly clamors. And there's some sort of undercurrent in AA where if some guy starts talking about God, they get mad at him and say, we don't want to hear that stuff. Mm-hmm. So believe me, the sickness is alive and well in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. It's alive and well in here. And this is your life. You need to wake up. You need to wake up. There's something more to this than just sitting around and congratulating yourself with crazy medallions just because you didn't have a drink. And listen, I understand. I get the fact, especially with newcomers. I get the fact that if, no matter how crazy it is, if you hadn't had a drink, you're a success. But somehow that has morphed into the only thing we're interested in that is that. And anybody who talks anything other than that is a heretic. And that's not the deal. Because the people that aren't interested in focusing on him will drink anyway. Which is why a lot of people drink. Okay, here we go. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had the purpose, not in the great things accomplished. Now, listen, this is what I want you to look for. I want you to look for the part where he talks about all the money he has. I want you to look for the fact when he talks about all the things he's got. I want you to look for the fact when he talks about all the sex he's getting and the girls he's going out with. I want you to look at what he's talking about, all the stuff you hear in the discussion meetings that people are worried about. You wait for that stuff, okay? Because he does talk about it. He does talk about his stuff. I'm going to point it out to you. He talks about the stuff. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, the tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. Here it is. Here's where he's going to start talking about the stuff. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. Well, we don't know what that means. Here it comes. My stock of material goods isn't great. That's it. That's all he's going to talk about, the stuff. I'm modestly successful. I don't have crap. I don't have anything. That's what he says. My stock of material goods isn't great. I don't have anything. If you want what we have and are willing to go to the end, you see, at the end of this thing, after I read it, you need to ask yourself this question. Do you want what he has? Because that tells me all about you. The only reason I'm here, talking about what I'm talking, the only reason I have whatever life I have here that I'm grateful for is because for some strange reason, I wanted what this guy had. And I don't understand that because I'm a Jewish kid from New York who worshiped Playboy magazines and the Playboy mansion, and all I wanted was the girls and the money and the car. I don't know. I have no clue how I listened to guys like this, and I said, man, I wish I could be like that. I have no idea. I don't even take credit for it. I'm just lucky. I'm blessed is what I am. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune. A fortune. There, now we're talking. A fortune. In friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. That's what like Al Kennedy had, the guy who was dying of cancer. He had that. He was one of these guys. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, Here we go. The greatest thing. Well, you interested in what the greatest thing is? Because I'm going to tell you something. The greatest thing that he got is the same greatest thing that's in the book. It's the greatest thing that was Dr. Bob's greatest thing. It was Bill Wilson's greatest thing. It's the greatest thing. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing according to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God. This guy was focused. Who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust, where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. He was interested in God, a loving God, in worshiping God, and helping other people. That was, man, he had the greatest thing in the world. He had it all going for him, man. This guy had the real deal. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Bill Dotson, third guy, the man on the bed, lawyer, okay? The guy who popped the nurse, you know? It would be hard to estimate how much, you know, there's a picture. I don't know what, there's a picture in here? It's in the bathroom? It's a picture in the bathroom, probably in the men's room. Go in there. There's a guy on the bed. There's a guy on the bed. That's Bill Dotson. And there's two alkies. There's Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and they're carrying the message to him. And Bill Wilson has the Bible open. Okay? And this is what it says. This is what he says. It would be hard. This is the next guy. These are the three main bananas back then. These are the guys that said, if you want what we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it. He says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others, this is what he noticed, this is what he saw. He says, I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I haven't got. See, this guy was sober. He was sober about 2 or 3 weeks when he wrote this 15 years sober, but he was sober 2 or 3 weeks when he writes about what happens here today. And he was sober. He was as sober as Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, but he noticed that they had something that he didn't have. And, you know, you ever do that? You ever go into a room? I used to do that all the time, and I'd look at these old times, and I'd say, you know, it's like Tiger Woods. You know, I play golf and Tiger Woods plays golf. And we use the same balls, the same clubs, but we're playing a different game. You know, I was going to AA meetings, but we were playing a different game. I was looking at these guys with 20, 30 years, and we were playing a different game because nothing bothered them, and I was bothered by everything. A breeze bothered me, you know. I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. His wife's name was Henrietta Dotson. We were eating lunch. Now, he's sitting there eating lunch, and he's looking at Bill Wilson like I was looking at Al Kennedy. He's just looking at this guy, who's like comfortable in his own skin, eating a tuna fish sandwich, looking at his wife. He's not even talking to him. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, this is what Bill Wilson said to her. He probably said a lot of things. This is what this guy picked up on. He says, Henrietta, the Lord, that's the word he used, the Lord. Nobody came down from AA and slapped him on the face and said, we don't talk about that Bible stuff, you know, anything like that. And he says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. He said, I'm so incredibly grateful to God, to the Lord, for curing me that I got to go. I got to tell everybody I know. I can't shut up about it. Unless you're in an AA room in the year 2013 where they tell you to shut up about it. You know what I mean? But I mean, he couldn't stop talking about it. He was so excited about the deal. I think I had the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. I wish in every AA meeting you had people screaming, look what the Lord has done for me. Look what God has done for me. Look what's going on. This would be a whole different fellowship. This would be a whole different fellowship. Instead of people worrying about what other people think about them. Dr. Bob, remember him? He was the real sober guy. You know, forget about, I mean, Bill Wilson's a nice guy with the LSD experiments and all that crap, and, you know, and all the other stuff. God bless him, may he rest in peace. He did a lot of good stuff, but this was the real solid guy. This was the solid guy. Even Bill looked up to him. If you think you're, this is page 181, if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting this book, I feel sorry for you. Not exactly a nice thing. What happened to love and tolerance is our code? What do you think these guys were doing back there during those 4 years? Before the Triangle Club. Before the medallions. When their life was online. These were serious sons of a bitches, man. They weren't screwing around with this thing. They brought you upstairs, got you on your knees. You gave your life to God or else you didn't go to the meetings. Listen, it may seem a little heavy duty, but it's a real qualifier. You know what I mean? They didn't have a lot of problems with the third step. There wasn't a lot of guys raising their hand, I got a problem with God, because you weren't even in the meeting. You had to beg them. You had to convince them that you had no problem with God to get into the meeting. Not a lot of guys saying, I don't want to hear that stuff. That was the first 4 years. Those are the guys who said, rarely have we seen a person fail who slowly followed our path. The path that most people aren't even following today. They don't even know what the path is. They lost sight of the path. Years ago. We're in some sort of fuzzy path, which people walk, you know, and some people, you know what the amazing thing is, the wonderful thing is, though? Even in AA today, some people find that path. That's the deal. That's the deal. And, you know, nobody's denied that path. And every person can have that path. So, in a sense, it is a good deal. You know, it's a large funnel. You know, the fact that people, most people go on the broad highway and don't find the path, it isn't AA's fault. You know what I mean? It's just, they're just not, you know what? It's the men from the boys. They're just not desperate enough, or they don't want it. They're not hungry enough or thirsty enough for that deal to have that path. I feel sorry. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, it is your affair. But if you really, truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all and sincerely feel that you must have help, we know we have the answer for you. It never fails if you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you're getting another drink. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. Then we go to page. We go to. How it works. Page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. Did you know that? Did you know you're on a different basis? You know, you probably think this is a psychological thing. This has to do with examining, you know, doing a good four-step, or having a good psychologist, or making amends. All these steps, you know what these steps are designed to do? To remove the obstacles that block you from God. That's all it is. It's all about seeing that your relationship with Him is writing great events. You know what they say at the very end of this book? They say, we know but a little. This is what these guys that wrote this book, you know what they say at the very end? They say, we know nothing. So your real reliance has to be on Him. Always has to be on God. He'll show you how to create the fellowship you create. See that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. It's all about God. That's what the great fact is, the whole focus. That's why they say there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find Him now. That's why they say in the A, B's, and C's that we read before every meeting, it says, no human, you can't manage your own life, no human power. God couldn't would if He was sought. That's why the whole book, it says, if you sincerely take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. The position that you focus on God. Being all-powerful, He will give you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His works well. These are quotes right out of the book. It's all about God. Their whole focus is on God. Those three guys are about God. It's all God, God, God. Everything is about God. It says, some of us had great, it says right here, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns, just the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly, there it goes, rely on Him, not self-sufficiency, His sufficiency. Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon Creator, our Creator. I mean, should I apologize to AA? Should I apologize to the trustees? Should I apologize to some thumb-sucking crybaby who comes up to me and says, well, I don't know, we believe in God. You hurt my feelings. I'm leaving it. Should I apologize to him for telling about the truth? The only thing that's going to save his life? Well, this book says we never apologize for that. It says we never apologize for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Laugh at those. I laugh at you. Paradoxically, I'm just doing what the book says. I'm just, it's not my deal. I'm just following the book. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. They said it again. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. You know what fear is? Fear is anxiety. Fear is worry. Fear is being... Anybody ever here ever worry about anything? Money? Things? Stuff? Anxiety? How would you like to have that removed? How would you like to not have to worry anymore about anything? How would you like to have the kind of sobriety when they tell you have cancer, it's okay, you're not even worried about it? How would you, you think that's possible? I know it's possible. I absolutely know it's possible. I know it's possible not to have worry. You know, I'll tell you, I went for 10, 15, 20 saying, man, when am I going to have this deal? When am I going to get better? When am I going to have the Alkendi deal? When is that going to happen? It's never going to happen. Listen, there's some, I'll tell you some, you're missing out on some good stuff on this deal. So, now we're going to whip over to the, now listen, now the first AA meeting, the first, now this is all has to, I'm going to end up on step seven. You're not going to, this might actually work. We'll see. This might actually work. This is the underpinning. Now, the first AA meeting was done by, who knows who did the first AA meeting? Does anybody know? It was Dr. Bob Smith. It's in the Dr. Bob's Good Old Timers. Who knows what the topic was of the first AA meeting? He read the Sermon on the Mount. He read from the Bible. He did what I'm about to do right now. Okay? This is what happened at the first AA meeting. He read from the Sermon on the Mount. Now, you won't see it nowadays, because even though it says, rarely I've seen a person fail, it's thoroughly followed our path, we don't follow their path anymore. And we don't thoroughly do it, and we're not allowed to do it because somebody will, that's right, they can't do anything to you. Well, that's right. Oh, they might look at you funny. Oh, that's right, alcoholics are scared of other people's judgments. Oh, that's right, we're broken personalities, we hate ourselves, we think we're pieces of crap, that's why we tell ourselves that all the time, and we walk on eggshells and worry about what people think about us. Right, that's right. I forgot who I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with defective people that are sucking their thumbs and worried about what other people think about them, so they don't have the courage to do what these guys were actually doing. Because they don't want people to talk about them behind their back. I forgot what I was dealing with. So this is the deal. So I'm going to do it. But I'm going to do it because somewhere along the line I lost that fear. I don't even know how that happened, but I'm going to blame it on God. It's his fault, so blame him for this crap. It's his fault. He made me do it, okay? Not the devil. God made me do it. So this is Dr. Bob Red's Sermon on the Mount. Now, I'm going to read a part of the Sermon on the Mount. It's on Matthew 6, which has something to do with the seventh step. And then I'm going to read something from the book of James. We were almost called to do that. It's another book that's conference, there's no such thing as conference disapproved, by the way. But, you know, in any event. So I'm going to read this part because, believe it or not, this has something to do with this program, this deal, and the seventh step. Okay? And you'll have to figure this out. Now, here's the deal. Some of this stuff, you're going to have to figure out yourself. As a matter of fact, most of it, you're going to figure out yourself. Most of it, you won't even remember. Most of it, you won't even pick up. But 20 years from now, it'll occur to you. Something will happen, and you won't even remember that it had anything to do with this meeting. But I'm going to read it anyway. Okay, this is on Matthew 6. It's called Treasures in Heaven. And I'm going to read it to you. And it just sort of, there's a little AA in here. Yeah, this is a sermon by Jesus. He stole the whole thing from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's true. He stole everything from the big book. It's all there. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where... Now, he's talking to a bunch of people. You know, he sponsored 12. He's talking to a bunch of people now. And very strange deal, you know. It's amazing what you could do with 12 really good sponsors. Well, one bad one, but 12 really... One guy who slipped. One guy slipped. It was a bad deal. It's in all the papers. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where... You remember that guy, the first guy I read? What he has a fortune in? You remember that deal? He says, I have a fortune. He's not even looking at the other stuff. He's not looking at the cards. He says, but you know why? Because he was doing this deal. He was doing this deal. It says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be, and where your brain will also be. Because when you're thinking about the car, and you're thinking about the romance, and you're thinking about the stuff, that's all you think about. All you think about is the stuff you have, or the stuff you want, or the stuff you need to have, or the stuff you don't want to lose. And when you think about that all the time, and it's always on your mind, and you don't have much power over that anyway, and even when you get it, it doesn't make you feel good. When you think about it, all that stuff all the time, you just hang out at discussion meetings a lot and whine and cry and talk about what you don't have or what you can't have or what they're going to take from you and stuff like that. And you never really get sober. You just pick up chips saying that you haven't had a drink, but you're not really sober because all you do is thinking all the time about the crap you don't have when he's giving you everything. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. You got to make your choice. This is the 7th, 6th step. You know, this is separating from me. You got to make your choice. You know, don't be talking to me about money. Don't be talking about that stuff. You got to make your choice as to what's important here. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life. I mean, can you imagine? These were people just like us. They're just like us. They're sitting around sucking their thumbs saying, how am I going to make the rent? Where am I going to get a job? And this guy's saying, don't worry about money. Don't worry about this stuff. They're saying just what you're saying. Is this guy crazy? Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Heavenly Father, that's the guy that Dr. Bob was talking about, by the way. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, will he not much more clothe you? O you of little faith, so do not worry, saying, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek, now listen to this, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Did you know we have that in here, seek ye first? Is there a sign here that says first things first?
Yeah.
That was Dr. Bob. It's right above me?
Yeah.
That was Dr. Bob taking it, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added to you. Okay? Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own, one day at a time. Now, the last thing I'm going to read from this, because it all fits together when we get to chapters, when we get to 7, is the book of James, the first part of James, the book of James. God, not money. Don't worry about that. Just focus on him. He's going to give you everything. Lay your whole life on him. Do that deal. Third step, you're willing your life over to him. And now we get to the 7th step. See, you don't work the 7th step. The 7th step works you. That's why they call it all-timer steps. Because you got to go through the experience. You got to go through life. You know? Think of yourself as like a lab rat. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're in the rat race. The rats are winning. You know, you're out there. You know, here's the book of James. Now listen. Consider it pure. Anybody ever had any difficult time? Anybody have any difficult times going on? Health problems, money problems, job problems, romance problems, you know, just problems. Okay, so here's the deal. No, it's my turn. My turn, buddy. My turn. You're gonna be up here tomorrow, okay? Consider it pure joy, my brothers. This is the book of... Whenever you face trials of many kinds. You understand that?
Yes.
Get excited and happy when you're having the crap beat out of you. You see, that's the old ideas. The old ideas is if you're not having pain, If you're not in trouble, if you're not struggling, you're doing well. But if you're struggling, you're doing badly. And what you need to understand is people that never have struggles and never have problems have no character. And the people that you admire most, the Mother Teresa's, the people like Mother Teresa, who's following, the guy from the New York Times was following around, he says, I'd never do what you do for $1 million. And she said, neither would I. The people that are the most admired in the world are the people that have the most incredible problems and somehow rise above them. They're the ones that people talk about them 2,000, 3,000 years later. It's not the flash in the pan. Not the Paris Hiltons. Nobody admires Paris Hilton. Unless you're an airhead, you know what I mean? Nobody cares. You know, she has no problems, but nobody admires those people. Just because they're talented. You know, you may want what she has, but that's only because you're an alcoholic. And you think that booze, drugs, and sex will solve your problems. And run around in fancy dress, that's what keeps Bloomingdale's in business. Listen, the good thing is if you're an alcoholic, you're not the only one who thinks this way. The entire world thinks this way. You know, the kind of thing that we're talking about that's in the Bible, that's in the big book, is thinking, you don't get this out there. It's understandable why you would think this is crazy and foolishness, because you don't get it on TV, you don't get it on the movies, it's not celebrated out there, you're not going to get it when you walk out in the street. Listen, you want something? You're not even going to get this crap in AA. You're not even going to have people talk to you like this in AA. You understand what I'm saying? Everybody is sucking on the addiction of stuff. That's more important than anything. Nobody's sucking on the Bible or sucking on this stuff or going on God. Nobody's doing this stuff. So it's not surprising that you would think this is goofy. But listen, it's your life. You can do whatever the heck you want with it. You know, listen, he's been so good to me, curing me this terrible disease, I just got to keep talking about it. So I'm just doing what Bill Wilson did, what all those guys did, you know. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its works so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. You see, the bottom line is what this says is as you go through life, sober, physically sober. And you will go through life physically sober. Everybody going through life sober? You're all going through life sober. And you get fired. Or you have money problems. Or you have, or your boyfriend or girlfriend leaves, or your husband or wife leaves. Or you have terrible health problems, or you have all the problems that you are going to experience, all the vagaries of life, which everybody in here is going to experience. You will not get out of life without getting the crap beat out of you. It's getting worse, not better, you know? The traffic, the whole bit, it's all out there waiting for you. It hasn't changed. You know, I know we used to have, the situation used to be, we'd have all sorts of problems and it was of our own making, you know? We'd get drunk, we'd get arrested for DUI, it was our own making. Now, we're not, thank God, after 5 or 10 years, you're not making the problems anymore, but they come at you anyway. They're being thrown at you anyway, because you're in the world. You know something? Now, here's the deal. While you're working this thing, if you have your focus, not on money, but on God, if you have your focus on this thing, when you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you've got 4 kids, and you got $50 in the bank, and they're foreclosing on your house, you understand what I'm saying? And you're trying to figure out what you're going to do when you can't come up with any answers. And you sit there and you have no idea what you're going to do. Because I don't know about you, but my sponsor never handed me money. I never went to an AA room and they handed me money. I never prayed or did something and all of a sudden money appeared. You know what I mean? It wasn't about money, okay? And all of a sudden at 3 o'clock in the morning, you have no place to turn. And all you do is you open up the big book. Or you say a prayer, or you say, God help me, or you say the serenity prayer, or you help another alcoholic. In other words, without even knowing it, because it looks messy. AA, sobriety looks messy. It doesn't look dignified. Sometimes working this stuff looks horrible. You're running around like a crazy person, but instead of turning to the bottle, or instead of hurting somebody, or instead of doing the crazy stuff that we used to do, okay? We open up the Bible, or we open up the big book, or we pray, or we help another person, or we go to a meeting. That kind of perseverance through life, what the Apostle James says, what it says in the book, it engenders faith. It makes your faith stronger, stronger. And every time you go, so in that case, what happens is the trials that you think are bad, if you focus on God, if you focus on that thing, they end up making you tougher, stronger. So by the time you got 30 years, you're like monster. You're like, and all of a sudden you're like Al Kennedy, you got cancer, and so what's that? What's the big deal? Because he's been through the whole thing, and it's all worked out, and he still loves it. And so all of a sudden you're experiencing the joy of living, because there's nothing not joyous, because it never gets that bad. Because it's all wonderful. It's always good. And so then you get to this book, the 12 and 12. It'll take about 3 minutes. We'll get out of here. We're going to rob this train. Don't worry about it. You know, one of the things about Alcoholics Anonymous, I talk about this all the time, is Alcoholics Anonymous is brilliant. It really is brilliant. They know about alcoholics because alcoholics, our chief characteristic is defiance. And, you know, one of the things that you... Turn off the phone already. Come on, stop that stuff. So what happens with alcoholics is, you know, alcoholics, you got to lie to them in order to, you know, if you come at them full force, you know what I mean? They'll fight you. So what do we tell them? We say things. You got a guy who's had on his 18th DUI. Okay, he's showing up the meetings drunk, and so what do you tell him? You tell him, well, I can't tell you you're an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Nobody can tell you that. You got to determine that. When you want to scream at him, you're a crazy alcoholic. You know what I mean? But you can't tell him that. You know? So you say, nobody. Hey, listen, nobody. Jack, I know it's your 14th DUI, but nobody can tell you you're an alcoholic. Just come around to AA meetings. So they hear all these guys talking about alcoholism, and all they really hear is, you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic, you're an alcoholic. And one day they stand up and say, you know something? What? I think I'm an alcoholic. Oh, my God. Can you imagine that? We never figured that. And they pick up and we all clap for him. But if you tell him he's an alcoholic, he'll fight you to the death. So, you know, so the whole book is about God. It's all about God. So what do we tell them? Oh, don't worry about the God stuff. It's not about God. It's not about God. No, you don't have to believe in God. It has nothing to do with God. So we're going to open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. We're going to close with the Lord's Prayer. And we're going to talk all about God. He says, this guy keeps on talking about God. He says, yeah, don't listen to him. It's not about God. It's nothing to do with God, you know. So, but all he's doing is talking about God, you know. You know, 10 years down the road, you know, he's a deacon in a Presbyterian church. You know what I mean? I don't even know how I got here. Well, that's what they do in the seventh step. They say here, they say, certainly no alcoholic. Remember the guy says, I have a fortune, I have nothing? He says, certainly no alcoholic, and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievements. You know what they're saying? This is what they say to you. This is what they say to the alcoholic. We don't want to put down stuff. Deprecate means we don't want to put down cars and stuff like that. So if you're an alcoholic, you're saying, thank God, because that's the most important thing in my life. Cars and girls and sex. You see, if you're an AA, you can do all that. See, nobody, this isn't like church. You know, this is like you can screw every gal in the world. You can get every car. You can do everything. Just don't drink, right? It says right here, we don't want to deprecate material stuff right there, right? That's it says it, right in AA. We don't want, you can do anything. Make love to a zebra. It don't matter, you know? This ain't church. Okay, it's great. Certainly no alcoholic and certainly no member of A wants to deprecate material achievement. So this is where they're going to get you. So they got you. Now you're going, you're like really A. This is why I like A so much more than church. You know what I mean? They're not good at two shoes. You can do anything. Nor do we enter into the debate with many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural instincts is the main object in life. We're not going to get into any debate or argument that to satisfy your basic instincts to go out there and rape, rob, and rip is the basic. We're not even worried about that. You know what I mean? Oh, man, that's good. I can act out. I can do whatever I want to do. Okay? You're feeling pretty good now. This is a pretty wild and crazy place. We're going to have a party later on, you know? Here it comes. Now that they got you sucked in. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. So then all of a sudden they come around the corner and they say, yeah, but if you try to live this way, you're going to die. I mean, you could do it. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, the only requirement for membership is desire to stay sober. I mean, you really can come in nude, you know, going crazy, but you're going to die. And it says this. It says... For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. That's right, gals. Blow up the Lifetime channel. I got your number. You know, I got three daughters and a wife. I know what you guys do, sitting around watching that crap. You know, thinking that your answer is, you know, going to be some guy coming around the corner, you know. And for thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. In all those striving, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap had been a lack of humility. We had lacked the perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and everything else will be added secondly. That's where the Bible comes in, okay? That's where the stuff all merges. And that material satisfactions were not the purpose of living. God and mammon. You can't do with God. It's all there, you know? Quite characteristically, we had gone all out in confusing the ends with the means. Instead of regarding the satisfaction of our material desires as a means by which we could live and function as human beings, we had taken these satisfactions to the final end, to be the final end in life. And then it says later on, just a couple other things, then we'll close up. It says, we could even believe that God existed. We could actually have an earnest religious belief that remained barren because we were still trying to play God ourselves. As long as we place self-reliance first, the genuine reliance upon higher power was out of the question. The basic ingredients of all humility, a desire to seek and do God's will, was missing. And then the whole book after that is they talk about, you know what they talk about? They say we learn the value of suffering. Just like in the Apostle James. We learn the value of going through trials, suffering, and turning to God more and more and more until finally there's nothing but God. And so it doesn't matter what we lose or what we gain or anything like that, because the one thing, because all we need is one thing. When God is the most important thing in your life, and all in your relationship with God is the most important thing in your life, that's what it says in the back of the book, by the way. It says, let no man says job and no job, wife and no wife. You know, you can stay sober. All you need is God and your relationship with God. It's all based on, when God is the most important thing in your life, what can they take away from you? What can they take away from you? What does it matter whether you have the car or you don't have the car? Whether you have the, you know, you have it, you enjoy it. You don't have it, you enjoy it. It doesn't matter because they can't take God away from you. What does it matter whether you have the bank account? For us, the process of getting a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations, which I think means more than once, that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told, and who realizes for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is the first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. So that's what the seventh step is all about. The seventh step is all about the humbly thing. The humbly thing, you know? The on your knee, the looking to him saying, help me. Help me. Help me. Relying upon him. Looking to him. Through the trials, through all the stuff, focusing your life on him, and then going on after that. And the more you're around, you know, I mean, really, the truth is, experience, you know, I know we have this saying in it. What's the saying in A? The guy is more sober, the guy whoever got up earlier in the morning, or something like that. Experience is a good thing. Experiencing life over a period of time and working these steps and focusing on God and focusing on your relationship with God as you're being hammered is a good, there is something about being in the desert, being in the oven, being hit, being hammered, but still coming back to meetings and focusing and all this sort of stuff that sort of grows your faith. And that perseverance grows, that's what the seventh step is all about. It's about that suffering that we go through in life as we're focusing on this stuff. And not many people, not everybody does it. You know, some people, you know, somewhere along the line, they turn to other stuff. It may not be alcohol. They may not turn immediately to alcohol. It may be relationships. It may be romance. You know, it may be the titty bars. It may be sports. But if it's anything else other than what they're talking about in these books, and you know what they're talking about. If it's anything else you turn to for satisfaction to assuage the deal other than him, you're going down the tubes eventually. Whether it's going to be the drink, I don't know whether you know about this. I know a lot of you do because you got some old timers in here. The drinking, let me tell you something, the slip occurs about a year before the drinking. 6 months before. You don't slip when you take a drink. You slipped 8 months or a year or two or three before that, when you started turning your focus away from him and turning it towards the world. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about step 8.